Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, and this is a special podcast separate from the normal one that will be myself, I'm Tim, and Phil.
Hi, Tim.
And JB.
Hello, Tim.
All nattering about all of the Southern Hemisphere rugby. We've got another special podcast for you now where we are going to focus on England versus Australia and the fine win, first ever win for England in Brisbane. We're going to get into that by chatting with our Aussie counterparts, the Green and Gold Rugby Podcast from Australia. We'll get into that in a minute. But firstly, and once again, if you've not got on board the Cornerstone train, then so many people are, Phil. During the New Zealand-Wales game, we got sent a beautiful picture of a shiny shaft.
This week on Twitter, there's been shafts everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. You've got mover shafts.
Once you've got your beautifully precision-engineered German shaft from Cornerstone, the mail-order razor company, then send us a picture of your shaft, hashtag show us your shaft. If you want to get a £10 discount off your first order with Cornerstone, which means that your first order could be as little as £4, just £4, and you get a free engraved with your initials shaft, and you can see what the number one rated razor feels like when you're giving it a shave. Better than Wilkinson Sword, better than Gillette, according to the GQ Awards. So cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
Egg10 at checkout.
Right, let's get into this podcast then, and it's time to welcome from the Green and Gold Rugby Podcast our counterparts from the other side of the planet. Matt.
G'day.
And Matt, where's Hugh today? Is he hiding?
Yeah, his life fell apart, mate. He's being looked after somewhere special.
Well, you're going to have to find a replacement for Pocock, but you've got a replacement for Hugh. G'day, Reg.
Hey, lads, how are you?
Did you see that coming, Reg?
Mate, I tipped it. Go back and read my Green Gold Rugby preview. I said England by 4, which it would have been if it wasn't for that last-minute try.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Fair play. Right, well, it may well be painful, but we're going to look back at that game. It certainly won't be painful for us. Let's crack on with it.
So, guys, look, like we did last time, I guess we started off at least, and I'm sure we can just chip in anyway. But, you know, talking about sort of the other side sort of thing. So I know this is a bit around the wrong way maybe, but do you guys want to kind of lead off and sort of say, look, what happened with Australia? I mean, what did it look like from your side? What did we do right, but then what did we do so wrong?
From the start, 10 minutes in, 2 tries, I thought it was going to be a whitewash. I thought it was going to be all Australia. And it was, both those tries were created by quick ball, good runners, quick ball, which didn't allow the England defence time to realign. So you repeatedly found, Australia repeatedly found themselves with Folau outside the 13 channel with loads of space running against, it seemed like, both the Vunipolas every time. And that created that created both the Hooper tries, one in the first half, one in the second half. And it made Australia look incredibly dangerous. And I was 10 minutes in, I was terrified.
Yeah, I was. The Aussie backs, Folau in particular, were cutting through like a fart after a foul in that first 20 minutes. They were. It was pretty frightening. And what I think changed from my perspective, and I know the yellow card played a part in this, but it seemed like the ball wasn't getting through Foley's hands anywhere near as much as the game went on. In that first 20 minutes, it was quick ball through Foley and out. The England defence is run by a guy who's been running the Saracens defence, and it's all about a quick press. and just line speed, and they were just showing, oh, you know what, we've got the skills just to drift outside that. And I don't know what they did. They suddenly started going to one out runners with the front five in particular, and it all sort of looked like Australia got a bit tighter, a bit more nervous, and a bit more narrow as the game went on.
Yeah, I mean, but then the other thing that then happened was, and look, I'm really interested in your perspective on this, because especially when you're at a game, all you're seeing is Poit throwing his hand up one way. And I think what the penalty count ended up 15-6 or something. And so when you're at a game and you don't really get a replay, you can't really see what's going on. Obviously, we're just shouting abuse at Poit, right? But, I mean, you know, obviously, you've got to say in the cold light of day, you've got to say fair play. There was something either going horrendously wrong for us or very right for you guys when it came to, you know, penalties, because that's really what got you back in the game. What was your read on that?
It did feel like Australia were kind of playing on the edge. So going in for turnovers when it wasn't quite on. And the big one, the repeated penalty, was around the driving maul. England set up a line out, set up a driving maul, and then immediately it felt like Scott Fardy was just diving at the ankles and just bringing it down, and it was penalty, penalty, penalty. And it felt like the Australia never learnt from that. It's kind of one of those things where you do it once, you see if you can get away with it. You do it twice. Mm. You don't do it 5-6 times and give away 5-6 penalties.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that was amazing is because I've been trying to make sense of this. For some reason, it didn't work at 3 a.m. in the whiskey bar. So I've been going back through it today and literally just writing down every penalty and trying to figure some rhyme or reasoning out of it. I mean, the one thing I can take out of it is that like about half of them were when we were on attack. So, you know, I would have thought, you know, yes, or, you know, sure, that sort of Fardy spoiling penalty, which he's pretty famous for, like you're talking about. But actually, there's only about one or two of those. Half of them were when we were, you know, hot on attack, and we've given away a penalty, and a couple of them, you know, Farrell's, you know, even kicked, and that just completely destroyed the whole momentum of the game, really, and just turned it around. I thought.
I think that was the great effort by the English pack. They knew when to attack the ball. You know, they defended when they needed to, but when they had the player and attacking a Wallaby runner that they knew they could isolate, they went hard. You know, Itoje and Haskell, who was immense, they knew when to go for it. And the Aussies wouldn't give it up, and that's why they were giving away those penalties.
By the way, Reg, you have to call him DJ Haskell. He's trying to launch a big DJ career. Just check his Instagram out and all the videos and stuff.
Is he really? He's going to have a fun week in Melbourne.
Yeah. Do you know what? I have to eat humble pie on that one. He was absolutely immense, and he did make big hits and even turnovers. He out-poopered Pooper at times, which was just unbelievable to watch.
You're exactly right. I watched the replay today and just watched him. I was at the game and up high and, you know, kept seeing the red headgear. But watched the game today. He played the game that if he was Pocock, we would be raving about. This is why he's the best player in the world. Haskell was sensational.
The great thing about that is he usually lets the hype go to his head and has a diabolical game afterwards. That's pretty much the Haskell way.
Yeah. Oh, no, like you, Tim, I'm not a big Haskell rater and, had to completely eat my hat with that performance. I'll tell you what he did, and I think this was – having watched it, watched it back, because I think there were a couple of clinical bits of English play. Actually, both of them I think Ford was really involved in. That long cut-out pass he threw, which put Yard in, I think.
Yeah.
And then that cross-kick he did for – is it – now what's the new guy's name?
With the
rat's tail. those two bits were really, really clinical, but I thought where the real otherwise attacking wise I wasn't blown away by England. I thought it was really really methodic, but it was just the defensive line speed was unbelievable. And having watched that pool game, you know, from the World Cup, they just swapped. Whereas our defensive line in that pool game was really fast, and it was Hooper who was setting that speed, and we were catching you behind the gain line time and time again. It was just complete shoe on the other foot, and that was Hask who was leading that. I thought.
I completely agree.
Time after time.
Completely agree. Now, I actually thought the biggest moment in the game came from an Aussie. The most important moment in the entire match came from an Aussie, and that's when Eddie Jones decided to take off Luther Burrell and bring on George Ford. That completely changed the game.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you
game.
Guys about that. Talk us through that. That was a staggering call, and it worked.
Well, I mean, right. So it was a big call putting Luther Burrell into the team. He didn't make the World Cup squad. He's quite limited in what he can do. And I think most England fans recognise that he's not the way you're going to beat Southern Hemisphere teams with a player like Luther Burrell. Eddie Jones picked him. I think because Ben Teo was injured was the reason he picked him. But he picked him. But whereas in the past, Stuart Lancaster would have decided before the game he was going to make a replacement after 60 minutes, and no matter what happened in the game, that's when it would happen. You might as well just like Excel macro it and go to the pub. whereas Eddie Jones clearly saw this isn't working defensively and attacking wise. This guy is out of his depth and it's not working, and we're getting cut to ribbons by the Aussies. And he changed it, and we went back to the double ball playing halfback. Well, no, 10-12 combination, and in attack. Territorially with the kicking, having an extra boot on the field and an extra pair of eyes, it just completely changed the way that the game was panning out. And interestingly, I mean, that's usually the way that Australia have played, and they reverted to a different style of play. And I think you just saw that maybe, and I think when you look at the way Wales played in other games, not wanting to get off point, but the two ball players in midfield, I think is that is modern rugby. That is 2016 rugby. Phil, what do you reckon?
I agree. That the George Ford coming on was right at the time that the game turned, or started to turn. And yep. it was coincidence that it was 2 minutes after the Foley disallowed try, which then he made the change, which then led to a Farrell penalty, which then led to the Joseph try straight after that. So it was a kind of coincidence.
14-point swing, maybe.
Yeah, the disallowed. Well, yeah. Even more than that, 17-point swing, because it was a disallowed try, then a penalty, then immediately the kind of slightly lucky Joseph try, and that did completely shift the momentum of the game.
So would you guys say that a sort of Gitto figure would have put England away?
Well, it's funny you say that, because actually that was Hugh in his write-up afterwards was saying he thought the guy we were missing the most was a Gitto. But I mean, it's as you guys were saying, I think it's a real mark of modern rugby, which is about the only way that you can get outside these fast press defences is you've got that second line of attack and you've got that second distributor who can get to the wide spaces. And that's what we were doing. And, going forward, that's going to be interesting because, we absolutely, we're cutting your outside guys to shreds, as you were saying. Without that and without that link, that became really, really difficult. I mean, I think there was a number of things for us as well. Then those injuries. So obviously, I think there was a couple at once that sort of happened or very close to each other, which was obviously Simmons at lock. Yeah. And then the line out instantly went shaky. And then Rob Horn was a big one for us as well. So he's a big defensive figure and really helps with the structure of that back line. So that all happened around that exact time you guys were just talking about.
Yeah.
And that's when the game completely turned on its head. And it was a completely different thing from there on in.
Do you think then Leo Fano, now he's got time to integrate with a squad, do you reckon he'll be dropped in at 12 as that second ball player?
That's what everyone's saying. So I think all the journos are saying, oh, that's the end of, the boshing centres type idea. We'll see. I mean, I think he would have been in there if he'd had time, wouldn't you have said, Reg, if he'd had time in camp?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone was saying that's Cheeky's model as much as anything.
So you guys have talked more about Australia. Reg, do you have some more for us to have a little bit more of a say about England and what they did well, or do you think we've covered it?
Yeah, let's go a bit on there. I think we ought to.
Wait, boys, talk about the scrummage.
I was going to say, we should be talking about set piece.
And I was just going to say, if it makes you feel a little bit better before we depart Australia, Haylett Petty had a good debut, as you'd say. So there were some bright shoots of green shoots there to focus on. But come on, then tell us about England. I can't wait to hear this.
Okay. Reg, go, mate. This is...
Oh, mate, I just thought, it was almost the opposite of our last encounter. I think, you know, we talked about the back row and Haskell, but Chris Robshaw too. I thought Robshaw had a fantastic...
He was outstanding.
He was outstanding. And you know, a credit to him considering, you know, the flack he's copped near and afar since last year. But, mate, I guess we've got to talk that set piece and particularly the scrum. I'm sure you've got the Spider-Cam still footage ready to analyse for us, but it looked like Cole was all over CO, even from my seventh level vantage point.
Yeah, I think he was. I think there was a bit of a masterful game going on there myself. There's been some talk about CO overextending sometimes, and I think Cole saw that and knew that and then sort of played into it. And from my perspective, I think you can kind of see Cole kind of pull him down and in. But, you know, he basically... one way or another, he got away with it. But then I think what was the telling factor was then when the locks had shifted around and then Mum was behind CO, in the scrum that CO gets sent off, England definitely have ascendancy. And they go right through, and Cole goes right through CO, who I don't think has got any pressure coming from behind him. And that's what does it. So I think that's when Poit goes, hey, this isn't just – two guys playing silly buggers who can drop who on the front. There was clear ascendancy in that scrum, and I think that's what sealed the deal. So, you know, you can see it either way you want for the others.
Yeah, another point for me to blame Dean Mum for the loss. I'm more than happy to take that one, Matt. That's good.
I'll give you that. There was that. I'll tell you the other thing that I thought was just I still can get my head around was the way that we kept picking out. Now, you know, Itoje. For the restart. Why the hell would
he was
you do that?
He was immense from the kickoffs. Yeah.
I mean, it was like every time we just kept going to him. It was unbelievable. He also showed that skill over the ball that you guys were talking about. Even if, you know, he kind of tends to, you know, rest his hands on the ground there a bit. I mean, you know, he was immense around the park and was obviously pumped up, and he was a real leadership figure for them as well, I thought.
Do you know what? There is our England captain. There is our England future. Yeah. I mean, world class at 21. Discuss, I guess, would be the thing there. I certainly think so. Every stage he's stepped up to, he's performed on. And like you said, there was a couple of big jackal moments over the ball at the breakdown. Majestic in the lineup, massively athletic, huge athleticism, ball carrying, and incredibly tight shorts, which compared to some of the England boys wearing the big Bermuda shorts, I really appreciated.
Well, you get some of that quad action.
Exactly.
So, I mean, who have we left out? Who haven't we given enough credit to in the England side then, I think, Reg? I mean, as far as backline goes, I thought Mike Brown, he didn't have his best game that I've seen him play. It was a bit like that game he had against us in the pool. But, you know, otherwise I'm trying to pick people out here.
Yeah, look, I think it was one in the pack. I think our back line looked pretty dangerous, mm-hmm. and our forwards couldn't keep up. I think the English pack did the deed. But the other point of difference was Farrell's boot against Foley. Farrell was dead-eyed dick and took every shot. I think he just missed the one, whereas Foley missed plenty.
when I look at our England team now, boys, what's really exciting for me as an Englishman, and feel free to chip in, Phil, here on this, is that you see players that I imagine 5 years from now are going to be the best in the world at their position. Owen Farrell is potentially one of them. Even George Ford, the fly half that came on, could be a potential superstar. Maro Itoje, Billy Vunipola. It's just really, really exciting. These young guys that are got so much further to go. They're really they are still on the upward curve of their career, and that's what I think. Eddie Jones, I think, has got the easiest gig in world rugby because he's got the biggest pool of players and some unbelievable talents coming through.
Now, look, so Phil, I've got a question to point towards you, mate, because I think on your last podcast you were rating Farrell above Foley going into this match.
I did kind of say 1A 1B, but yeah, I did choose Farrell.
Yeah, I'm not coming in swinging here. It's fair enough. But I was just going to say, having watched that game though, if you took out, I mean, you know, Farrell got given far more shots at goal, obviously, than Foley did. So you take out some of those wide shots from Foley. As far as the rest of 10 play, how would you assess the two, though, in that match that we just gone?
It's probably difficult because Farrell played 50 minutes as inside centre. If you take the first 30 minutes where they were directly opposite each other, I thought Foley outplayed him. And I thought Foley was very unlucky to have that try disallowed, in all honesty. I thought the block, was it Rory Arnold? The TMO said Rory Arnold initiated contact. It looked to me like he was trying to get out of contact, and Burrell was the one who was trying to almost hide because Burrell was out of position. And that finish, if it was given as a try, was absolutely sensational. There's no way that Owen Farrell could do something like that. And so taking those first 30 minutes, I would go for Foley. But then Foley was, well, in those first 30 minutes, I think he missed 2 out of 2. And he was a 50% kicker on the day, and Farrell was a 90% kicker on the day. And that makes a big difference.
Mm. And I would add that, you know, if you had to choose between one and they were completely identical, I would go Foley because of his 1920s cowboy villain pencil moustache as well.
You'd have to, Dastardly Dan, exactly. Okay, guys, so look, I think we've probably pretty much done the match, except the one talking point. I'm interested in everyone's viewpoint on this. Hooper's decision at the end, which was to take the three rather than go to the corner. It's caused a lot of discussion over here.
Well, it's very similar. Very similar to the same decision that Robshaw had to make in the World Cup pool match against Wales. To either, which just got a little giggle out of JB, who's listening in the background, our resident Welshman. Where he could have kicked a maybe 60% kick to score 3 points and tie the game, or kick to corner and try and win. And he went to corner, tried to win. We didn't win, and we were knocked out of the World Cup. Personally, I understand what they would. At the time, I was thinking, "What are you doing?" But on reflection, I think even had Australia scored the try, and the chances of scoring those pushover tries are quite rare. On reflection, I'm like, "Yeah, I get that. You get the ball back. You were quite good in the loose. I quite like the fact Hooper backed his boys to be able to do it. As we've said before, they were at times cutting England's backs to ribbons. So with 2.5 minutes,
yeah. Reg, where were you on that one?
Oh, mate, I think take the points. I agree. I remember last year, I think they did it again in the when we played the box at Suncorp when we went for the win. But I think in that situation, you've got to take the points. And, gosh, what happened? Was it 10 minutes early when it was a similar kick and we went for the line and pulled off that debacle of a line-out move at the front where Mum dropped it on and then knocked it on, and then I think CO knocked it on after that. So it was, yeah, I mean, maybe they'd put off by that terrible line-out play. But, I thought it was a right call.
I agree. I think you have to take the points there. You've got to score twice. Take the first points, and then you've still got the full 3 minutes. If you go for the corner, you can erode those 3 minutes just trying to go for the line and not have the opportunity to score twice. I also agree with your previous point that 10 minutes earlier, where they went for the corner, they probably should have taken the points.
Yep.
So I think they got the second issue, the final decision correct, the earlier one wrong.
I want to bring one more. We've talked a lot, at least it was in the press down here, about the mind games and the lead up. I reckon the mind games on the field too, and I think the Poms were all over us on the field. You look at the lead up to that Foley non-try, and Itoje gives it a little push in the back, and Moore just blows up, and he, you know, looks around, who did that and who did that? And when Foley scored his try, in inverted commas, you know, Moore was straight up to Itoje and all that sort of stuff. And later on, you know, I saw Moore throw a pretty cheap shot elbow. And guys like Fardy and stuff, I reckon they got to. The Poms were en masse in there, and they were all, you know, on the edge and giving it all. And I reckon it really got to the Aussies.
Yes. Yeah, no, I thought so. There were some shell-shocked guys walking around as well, yeah. I think, about halfway through. And it's been like, you know, just the look on CEO's face as he around those scrums, he looked shattered. He was absolutely gone, I thought.
Because scrum, he was getting half a dozen pats on the back from the English. You know, after any penalty, they were all coming up to him. He was all over it.
Yeah.
So obviously, you guys are disgraced by that performance, obviously.
You can't
back that, can you?
The rivalry between the two nations is long and it's traditional, but a lot of those players, and this is one of the points, there's not a massive difference between that team that played in Brisbane at the weekend and the team that played at Twickenham in the World Cup. And imagine the pain on home turf getting battered by Australia. And so, yeah, I love the attitude that Eddie Jones has instilled, that real uncompromising attitude that he's instilled. I loved seeing all that.
There's one thing I didn't love was, and it happens all the time at all levels of the game, but a 50-50 penalty scrum and the wingers, the centres, the fullback all run into, and it's half patting their own tight head and loose head on the back, and half they're kind of like rubbing it in the face of the opposition. Yeah.
No, you can't. England talking Australia. JB, you can't get in. You just get out. I know what he's saying, celebrating like it's a try when it's just a scrum penalty.
It's just a scrum penalty. And furthermore, if it's the wingers running in, it's unnecessary.
Like they know what's going on.
Yeah, they've got no idea. They don't know. The penalty could have gone either way.
It's like the deep square leg complaining about an LBW decision not going their way.
Exactly, yeah.
So I think that the rule we should have there is that if any of the props can, if they get a free swing, and if they manage to hit any of those backs, you know, it's no harm, no foul.
Yeah,
fair dinkum
situation.
I like it.
It's like a free hit zone. If you're going to be there, it's your own shout. All right, guys. Well, look, let's look forward, and I think maybe why don't we start with England, and I'll throw to you guys, Tim and Phil.
Yeah.
What needs to change? Does it? Do you have any injuries? Do you think what should Eddie do? What do you think he will do going into Melbourne?
Well, I suppose the big question is that 10-12 position, because rightly Eddie Jones recognised. I mean, how often do you see an international player pulled off after 30 minutes?
Not often.
It just does not happen. And you
occasionally, very occasionally see it front rows if they're getting completely destroyed. But other than that, very, very rarely.
So I suppose the question is, will it be Farrell at 10 or Farrell at 12? Farrell will be in the team. So it is. I think the question is it Ford at 10 or is it Tio or Slade at 12? One of those players is going to come into that 15.
I think he will revert to what was so successful during the Six Nations, and at the end of that game, I think he'll go Ford and Farrell.
I agree. And it's if you can go back and listen to our podcasts pre-World Cup, it's what me and Phil were saying, why we want to see this combination. But it wasn't tried and tested by the time the World Cup came around. So it was with the pressure of a World Cup, we didn't try it and we didn't roll the dice on it. And maybe it would have been a different World Cup had we done, because I think those two can unlock the wider channels, as we've talked about.
And have you got any injuries at your side that you're aware of?
Not that we're aware of, no.
Okay.
No one went off for injuries as far as I'm aware. So besides that, I would leave the rest of the team unchanged.
Could Pocock in any way be a blessing? I'm trying to find the positive out of it. It might change the dynamic of your back row. I don't know.
Yeah, thanks for the
I think
concern.
You're right. I think I think some people are calling that. I think that's been recognised, is that we lacked a line bender. You know, your Vunipolo or any of that sort of ilk, and maybe this is our chance. And I don't know which way they're going to go, Matt. I mean, the options are obviously Benny McCallum, who I feel some sort of loyalty to on the back of his World Cup performances, particularly the Welsh Test. But maybe it is a Leroy Houston. Perhaps you guys are better served to answer that question for us. Leroy's form at Bath, is it test standard?
Firstly, when he gets the ball or when his name's called out on the team sheet, does the whole crowd shout Leroy? Because if they don't, that's what they did at Bath. Then you need to get on it.
Okay,
we'll get on it.
We'll get on that. I tell you what did go down like a sack of shit though on over the tannoy. Was the fee-fi-fo-fun. Oh,
yep, absolutely.
Oh, dear.
That was unbelievable. Did you guys see that at all? They tried to get this chant going.
I didn't get
where
that.
We were all supposed to chant fee-fi-fo-fun. And I couldn't believe it. They were trying to get us to chant a nursery rhyme at a rugby match. Anyway, so Leroy, it would be definitely better than that.
Standard, would he get in the England squad, Leroy Houston? I don't think he would.
No, probably not.
Ahead of Billy, no.
No, he won't get ahead of Billy.
Potentially in the wider squad, but...
maybe. He might be on the cusp. He is... I do think that Australia almost lacked, particularly around the middle of the game, they lacked a big ball carrier, or they lacked having multiple options. Scott Seo carried pretty well. Horwill carried quite well when he came on. Rory Arnold carried quite well at times. But I think they did lack that. So whether bringing him in gives a slightly different option.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say the other one who I would probably expect to start, who could shore up the scrum and give a bit of a ball carrying option, is Kepu.
Mm. Definitely.
Yeah, I think we might see James Slipper as well at Loosehead, who both are probably stronger scrummers, I think, or particularly given CO's last test, but both Kepu and Slipper are much better ball runners.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're looking for big boppers, the two that Checker would then normally go to would either be Cliffy Palu, maybe you could get a half a footy out of him, maybe, and I don't know if he could with that test pace. And the other one is Will Skelton. That they both raise big questions over here. Are they up to it? Are they up to sort of international quality? But they're pretty much the only big bopper sort of ball runners we've got around the place. Benny McCalman's really a six, and he's busy, but he finds it hard to make those yards. So, yeah, that's a really big question going ahead. Or does he, try and stay with some sort of pooper combination where you'd probably reach out to Liam Gill? I'll tell you one thing I did hear is that that obviously George Smith signed for the Queensland Reds here.
Oh, no way, no way.
I had heard that.
So there you go. He's available.
Well, that'd be weird. That'd be definitely a foot in both camps, because he'd be warming up himself, then he'd be nipping across the English side to give some tips to Haskell to help coach.
Indeed.
How long is it going to take to revoke Eddie Jones and Glenn Ella's citizenship over there?
Yeah, it's in progress, mate. I've got the petition fired up. it's going. So that's going to next week. But yeah, there's plenty of work to do. I mean, all the set piece. Then you've got players out. I mean, yeah, there's a whole. What's the full rundown on our injury list there?
Oh,
Reg,
mate, it's not official. Pocock's definitely out, but you'd have to think Horn. By what I heard, Simmons was barely mobile post game, so you'd have to think he's a big chance of being out. But Horn failed a concussion test, so there's another one. And that's really interesting selections there. Perhaps you're looking for a big bopper. We might end up with a big bopper on the wing in big Tekeli and Nayaravoro.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, guys, you shouldn't get... I don't think you should get too down. It was... it finished an 11-point win, but really it was a 4-point win with that last-minute try. Disallowed try, question mark. A kicker who had... just a bit of a bad day at the office kicking, some strange decisions about when to go for posts maybe and take points that were on offer. And you're talking about all these problem areas, the scrum, the line out, the defence, the maul defence. And actually, you know what? This was Australia's first game in quite a while, right?
Since the World Cup final.
That I think is a very important point. Australia's first game since October, November. England, in the last 4 months, they've had kind of 2.5-3 months together because of the Six Nations.
And 7 games under Eddie Jones.
Yeah. So I think that is a very important point. The time to kind of bond as a team and get used to training and playing together.
Righto. Well, look, let's hope. I mean, just so that I've got to say, I've got tickets to the Sydney test, so I'm definitely hoping Melbourne comes good. So can I take that as a tip? You guys are tipping Australia for the second test?
Do you know what? I'm delighted to say that my prediction of 2-1 to Australia is looking weak at the moment. I think it's going to be tight, and I think Australia will improve. I'm worried about what the effects of not having Pocock in, because he is a game changer. He is an absolute game changer. And I think he could be worth 7 to 10 points on his own, just with the speed that England are going to be able to get ball as a result of him not being on the field. Well, I think we might edge it, but I think... I think it's a toss of a coin on the day. I don't know. I want to see the teams before I make that call.
I'd agree with that. I do. I've got almost a feeling, kind of like the 2013 Lions, where Lions won the first test narrowly, then Australia won the second, and it all came down to the final test. So I'm kind of edging like that. I think Australia could win the second test, but seeing the team sheet will be important, and. The two big changes for me would be Kepu coming in and Leoliafano to have that second ball player to speed up and give good quality front football to Kurundrani and to Folau for them to run.
How about you? Are you still optimistic, boys?
Well, Reg,
you tipped England. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I tipped England, but I for what played out, I didn't think we had the great preparation, and that was my big fear, and the fact that England had been together for so long, had played the Six Nations and all. I'm still confident. Pocock is a massive blow. It was interesting watching the game. I didn't pick up how effective he was. Hooper was obviously superb, but Pocock, watching the replay, he a couple of really critical turnovers, and he was really strong. So that's a big loss, and it'll be fascinating to see how they fill that gap. But as Hugh's article picked up today, it's not all doom and gloom, and for the exact points you guys just said, it wasn't too far in at the end, and we've got a fair bit of improvement to do. So I reckon Chica can get that out of them in a week.
You mentioned the FIFO-FUM. I'd always say I think the other humble pie is going to be eaten by your Fox Sports guys for that little advert that they made.
you haven't met those guys, have you? So I don't think there's going to be a lot of fun going down. The one thing I was going to throw in is an interesting tidbit, which is a bit concerning from my perspective, is just that on the morning of the announcement of the Australian team, when was it, Thursday, they still didn't know who was playing 12.
Yeah.
So, that was still up in the air. And actually, it was. We've got that through other information, but Karevi said himself that he was more surprised than anyone else in the whole room that he was going to be playing 12. And when you think, you'd hope that you'd have an understanding, with the 10 that you're going to be playing with. So, I mean, if you're the guy who's most stunned in the room that you're actually going to be pulling on the jersey, that's a bit of a worry, I would think. It was interesting. I don't think this prep was quite as solid for the Australian team as maybe we'd like to think. So anyway, look, hopefully we can. I'm just hoping we can pull this one off so it keeps it live for Sydney, and we'll have a great. Otherwise, JB, who I can just sense is his smile is getting wider in the corner of that room.
He's well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Prediction 3-0. His 3-0 bloody prediction, which I laughed off.
Yeah, but that's like Sophie's choice. He hates England winning, but he's predicted England win 3-0, so he'll be happy and devastated at the same time.
Boys, just before you go, I've got a quick question.
He couldn't go a podcast without chipping in. Come on.
Sorry, I need to ask this. Hypothetically, right, if the nice Aboriginal lady said you don't have permission to play, what's the protocol?
Yeah.
We literally all have to shut the match. That's it. We have to move to the local park.
Yeah, it would have been jumpers for goalposts. And,
no, actually, we would have dragged Gary Eller out of the English coaching box and got him to overrule as closest Aboriginal.
We're obviously delighted. But like I say, I don't think you should feel as down as maybe some Aussies will. And on we go to Melbourne. And Matt and Reg, been a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. And we'll speak again. Oh, have we got a date for next week as well?
Same again.
Same time, same place.
As you were.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Sounds good. All right, boys, we'll speak to you next time.
You take care. In a bit.